All right, welcome back to Third String Podcast. It's been about a week since we've laid down a podcast, maybe even more than that. And there's been a lot of baseball action that we've missed, and there's a lot more to talk about, fortunately for us. But I'm joined on this podcast, as always, by my good friend and co-host, the brilliant, the charming, the often imitated, never duplicated, Pete LeCleed, coming in live from Las Vegas, Nevada. As always, Pete, how are you doing?
That was an epic lead-in. I'm doing so much better after hearing that.
Good. I'm trying to give you good introductions.
I appreciate it, man. I'm not coming to you live from Maui Brewing Company in Honolulu, Hawaii, so I'm good, but not nearly as great as I was 2 weeks ago, which, man, we talked like an hour and a half before the Hokies game kicked off 2 weeks ago against Old Dominion.
Yes.
Oh, good thing I was in Hawaii for that one. My goodness. But can't really complain because I was at Maui Brewing Company, but I'm good. That was a long answer to a short question. I'm good, man. How are you doing in beautiful Austin, Texas?
I am doing great here. This is selfish of me. I am sad for you in some ways that you're not in the Maui Brewing Company right now. But in other ways, I think it might have been bad luck for you to be there because your Hokies lost. And more importantly, in our Dime a Dozen segment, we went like 6-6 on our picks. It was terrible. We were just doing money line bets and we couldn't even pull that off.
How ridiculous has this NFL season been? I know that we're here to talk about baseball today, but it has been a ridiculous NFL season. But at the same time, I would go to Maui Brewing Company every day and go 6-6 in our Dime a Dozen if I could. So,
okay, fair enough.
You know, I'm sad, but not heartbroken.
What about your Hokies, though?
Oh, boy. So, obviously, I was in Hawaii that day, and we had a great Saturday planned, as you and I were talking, Saturday morning, Hawaii time. And I was not the nicest fellow for the rest of the day. And you know, I was trying. My wife is a saint, but I'm pretty sure she would have pushed me in a volcano the rest of the day if I could have. Because, boy, that was just an awful showing. And really nothing redeeming about it. Obviously, they bounced back. They got a big game against Notre Dame coming up. But, yeah, it's we knew it would be a young team. And I think, unfortunately, the young team we were expecting kind of did what young teams do, and I think overlooked an opponent. I think probably didn't think it'd be that competitive. Maybe looked ahead a little. I don't know, but that was painful. Thank goodness I was in Hawaii, where, you know, the Hawaiian people really don't care about what happens on the mainland. I mean, they have NFL and college football games going on at like 6 a.m. on Saturdays and 7 a.m. on Sundays, and it happens in the background, but those guys don't care. They're on island time. And, you know, maybe that was the best place to be for that. So,
do you think the Hawaiians were the only people who cared about the Pro Bowl when it was in Hawaii?
Yeah. And you know what? Driving around, I spent a little time over at Pearl Harbor visiting that memorial. And I didn't know that stadium sits almost right next to the Pearl Harbor Memorial.
No kidding.
Right there on the bay. Yeah. Wow. It's maybe a 3-minute drive. And it is a huge stadium that doesn't seem to get used a lot. I mean, obviously the University of Hawaii plays there, but that's what, 6 games a year and then probably an exhibition or two. So I bet the people of Hawaii are hurting a little financially, but I get the feeling like Hawaii doesn't really care about football except for people who are there on vacation who are watching their fantasy lineups.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. Well, we are going to do the Dime a Dozen segment in the podcast. It'll be released after this one. Today, we're going to talk about baseball, and it's something that we're sort of behind the power curve a little bit on, Pete, because we've been talking a lot of football lately and we've also been leading busy lives. So it's been hard for us to figure out a time to sit down, but I think it's time for us to sit down and talk about some baseball stuff. So I think maybe the best place to start is the first time in baseball history that we've had two game 163s. And what I mean by that is there were two teams in two different divisions that were each tied exactly for the lead of that division. And so the way that baseball does this tiebreaker is not head-to-head record in the regular season. It's not run differential. It's nothing like that. It's just very simply, let's get these two teams to play each other in a one-game playoff. The winner of that is the winner of the division. And, you know, I don't know about you, Pete, my general thought on the game 163 is this was the Dodgers versus the Rockies and the Cubs versus the Brewers. They were playing in Los Angeles and in Chicago. And I think one of the interesting things about the game 163 was that it wasn't a winner-take-all game. It was not a winner-go-home game because the alternative for those teams that were not going to be the division winners were that they were just going to get the wild card in the National League. And so that was kind of interesting, just a strange dynamic there, because all it really did was make the path to the playoff or path to the World Series easier for the winning team. but it didn't actually have any fatal consequences for the losing team. So in that sense, it was anticlimactic, but in another sense, I kind of thought it was a little bit more fun. What do you think?
Man, I totally agree. I think one of the best things to happen to Major League Baseball was having that game 163 this year, because it was a fun year, but I think viewership was down a little. I think once some of our bright stars kind of started fading, like Shohei Ohtani and Bryce Harper and the Nationals fading, and the Cubs, who were so strong at certain points in this year, not having a great September. And as much fun as it is for us baseball fans who are really into the game to see teams like the Brewers and the Rockies put on a strong showing late in the season, I don't think it's really great for the baseball brand, because baseball wants the Yankees, the Red Sox, which obviously they got, but they want the Dodgers. They want all these big market teams to really be competitive. And so I think that game 163 almost gave us another chance to get up for the playoffs. And I think it's honestly great that it wasn't a go-home scenario on Monday for either of those games, because those managers had to manage like they do the rest of the season, where you have a game tomorrow. Obviously, today matters so much, but you have a game tomorrow that you have to figure out and you have right. to process, and you have to. I mean, you look at how the Brewers do business, and obviously they won, but the Brewers are in the bullpen by the fifth inning. And you look at how Joe Maddon is trying to manage, and you look at what the Rockies are doing with what should be a great offense, not doing anything and just trying to hold on desperately against the Cubs. It was so fascinating to watch how these managers. Yes, it was. I would argue the most important game of the season they had played, but at the same time, they had a game tomorrow, and it was so much fun. And you know, for me being on the West Coast, it was especially great in that I got out of work and I was home by maybe the fourth inning, and that Cubs game, that thing went forever. But it was an exciting game for a 1-0 and then 1-1 and ultimately 2-1 game. That it was a lot of fun to watch, but it has been an investment this week to watch baseball.
Yeah, it really has. No kidding. How about this question? The game 163 is the Cubs versus the Brewers and the Rockies versus the Dodgers. Were you surprised at the outcome of either of those games?
I was surprised. So if we're in game 163, so I'm taking myself back to Monday, because I was very surprised on Tuesday with the actual wild card. But on Monday, no, I think based on the direction of both the Dodgers and the Brewers right now, I think those were kind of our expected outcomes. The Cubs, I know that you pointed out that the Cubs went to bed on Friday as the best record in baseball and sitting pretty, and just the way that the Brewers came on sweeping the Cardinals in St. Louis last week, having a great weekend, you could just feel that the Brewers were churning in the right direction. And the Dodgers, who I thought early in the season were in trouble, then you and I talked at length about how they came on, the NL West couldn't put them away, and then the Dodgers had a great September. I think it was something like September 5th or 6th. We were all kind of counting them out, and then the Dodgers came on. So no, I wasn't really surprised, just because baseball, I mean, like all playoffs, is all about who's hot now, but baseball especially, it just seems that if you're clicking now, good luck to the opposition.
Yeah, I totally agree. I thought the one surprise to me was the Brewers-Cubs. I actually thought the Cubs would win that matchup. I think most people expected the Dodgers to best the Cubs or the Rockies in a one-game tiebreaker, and that, of course, happened. But the Brewers-Cubs game was interesting. The final score was 3-1, but the box score shows that it was not the close affair that it sounds like it was. I mean, Chicago scored one run, and that was off of a Rizzo solo home run. Milwaukee yep. scored three runs, but really they should have scored more. They had 12 hits in that game compared to the Cubs' three. So this is, I mean, just think about this. This is, at the beginning of the season, a Cubs offense that we were talking about, including guys like Rizzo and Baez and Bryant, one-time Rookie of the Year and MVP, Wilson Contreras, and veterans like Daniel Murphy, who went to the Cubs in the middle of the season, Kyle Schwarber, the left-handed slugger, Jason Hayward. I mean, a lot of guys who have really turned in good offensive seasons in the past, but it just has not been there for the Cubs outside of Baez consistently to any degree this season. And the story of the Cubs showing up and turning in these pretty paltry, like 1- and 2-run performances, has been a consistent theme. I think this was the 40th game this year in which that was the case. So, you know, I was surprised to see it, because I'm not used to seeing the Cubs be sort of ushered out of the playoffs in the manner of the losing the tiebreaker and then losing the wild card. But I think it makes sense when you look at the broader arc of the Cubs season, but it is crazy. I mean, like you mentioned, on Friday, the Cubs had the best record in the entire National League, poised to have the number one seed going into the playoffs. And then, you know, as of Wednesday, they're out of it entirely. They're not even going to the playoffs.
Yeah, and I think you look at the Cubs all year, and obviously the Brewers came on so strong, especially in the second half of the season. Obviously, we talked about them in our preview back in March that we thought that they had a great offseason, especially in the outfield, especially think of guys like Yelich, who they're able to bring in. And they really won the offseason, and that actually translated. So that was exciting. But the Cardinals had a great August, but obviously fired Mike Matheny halfway through, and then a very mediocre September. The Cubs really should have run away with this, I would argue, outside of an outstanding...
I totally agree.
Milwaukee outfield and bullpen. I mean, Milwaukee didn't really do anything else to set the world on fire. The Cubs just could not get it going. In a way, it almost reminds me of what happened with the Nationals, and obviously I talk about what I know, but you look at the Nationals and all the great pieces they had, and just an inability to gel, and I think you can look at, especially the Cubs' offense. I mean, the pitching was good. Not great, but it was good. And it was just all those pieces. I don't know if it was just the injury bug that was just striking at the wrong time in Chicago, but boy, with all the pieces they had, they should have run away with this pretty easily. And I think we all thought it would probably be either a Dodgers-Cubs or Cubs-Nationals NLCS. And now we are into the first day of the baseball playoffs and don't have the Nationals or the Cubs, which is pretty surprising. So it's, I don't know. Do you think Joe Maddon is in trouble right now?
I do. Ken Rosenthal of The Athletic has been actually saying that there's some rumor that he could be out of a job coming up here. You know, I don't know what to make of that, though. I do think that there's something to it. I think that he could be out of a job. But I also think that it's hard to fire a manager on the basis of a, you know, two games lost here, one tiebreaker and one a wild card one game playoff. In the grand scheme of things, the Cubs did finish with the tied for the best record in the National League, and it's just hard to fire a manager at that point. On the other hand, there are questions, I think, about Maddon's ability to lead the team, not just related to performance on the field, but also Addison Russell's suspension. MLB just suspended him for 40 games. Sure. That'll it's retroactive to end of September, but it will stretch into next season. And that's because of domestic violence allegations from his ex-wife that look to be pretty credible. She detailed these allegations on a blog about 2 weeks ago, and they're pretty horrific. But when Maddon was asked about them recently, he said he hadn't even read them. And I think that does not play well for the Chicago Cubs front office, and I think they probably didn't appreciate Joe Maddon saying that. So there's that. There's also the fact that he only has 1 year left on his contract, so this could be a convenient time for the Cubs and Maddon to part ways. So I think that is something to watch, but I'm not convinced it's going to happen. What do you think?
I agree in that. I think he's on a little bit of thin ice. I think he absolutely comes back next year and probably hangs on for at least the next year, maybe gets a 1 or 2 year extension. I think you just watch the body language of this club and it looks very different than it did in the
World Series. I totally agree.
Yeah.
Years. This is not the 2016 squad.
Yeah, and honestly, what I'm wondering, because obviously I pay so much attention to the Nationals, I'm wondering how much guys like Davey Martinez were really important to that run. And you watch how the Nationals responded to Davey Martinez, even when things were going really badly in Washington this year. And the body language of the Nats, even as they were losing, reminded me more of the Cubs of 2015, 2016, maybe even 2017, when they obviously got through the NLDS and then lost in the NLCS. The guys just seemed to be in it more and to be more about the brand than they were this year. I mean, you don't get me wrong. You still saw the Cubs having a great time in the dugout, still high-fiving Joe Maddon every chance they got, but something just felt different. I don't know if it was playoff fatigue that they'd been here so many times, but the team just didn't seem to have that fun spark to it this year that they have in the past years. I mean, it was so easy to root for the Cubs for so long because, one, I mean, for the longest time, they were the lovable losers. And obviously, they are nothing near the lovable losers they used to be. But at the same time, they're always the down-and-out guys who started having fun. And I didn't see that this year at all. It was almost, I don't want to say it was almost a foregone conclusion that they were going to win the NL Central. And obviously, that didn't turn out well. But it felt like the team expected to win. And really struggled to deal with the fatigue of a 162-game season.
Well, speaking of teams expected to win, and the Cubs, I also thought the same about their game against the Rockies in the wild card game that really was a winner go home matchup. So the Rockies lost to the Dodgers in the tiebreaker. The Cubs lost to the Brewers in the tiebreaker. They both go to Wrigley to play each other in the winner take all loser go home game to decide the true NL wild card winner. And you and I were texting back and forth as we were watching this game. Kyle Freeland for the Rockies goes out and just puts on an absolute gem.
Fantastic.
Just incredible to watch. And his velocity was actually up in the game from where it's been the rest of the season. He was throwing 95, 96 pretty consistently, all beautifully placed around the strike zone. Really impressive. If you haven't seen Kyle Freeland or heard of him, you will, because this guy is a rising star. So he's in a duel against Lester, and the Rockies are sustaining a 1-0 lead. 1-0, right? You have that right?
Yep. 1-0 until what, the eighth inning?
Right. And then Kyle Freeland comes out, Adam Ottavino comes in, and Ottavino's got this really nasty slider that has like 7 inches of break, more than average on it. Really hard to hit when it's placed well, but he was just really, you could just tell he was not settling in. And Drew Butera, the Rockies catcher, was also not settling in. And their synergy was just off, and Ottavino wasn't placing his pitches well. And basically what happens when you don't place a pitch well against Javi Baez is he'll make you pay. So Javi Baez ended up driving in the tying run. The game went to extra innings, 13 innings. We were texting back and forth at this point, Pete, and when Javi tied it, you and I both thought the game was over at that point.
Yep.
Because what it came down to was how long the Rockies would be able to leverage their starter, Freeland, to just get as large a lead as they can. But they went in with the slimmest of leads. And as soon as their bullpen blew that, the Rockies are not known for having a great bullpen. So as soon as their bullpen blew that, we're like, okay, that's it. The Cubs are going to break out here and it's going to be game over for the Rockies. So it was fun while it lasted. It was a valiant effort, but no more. But again, the Cubs offense just entirely anemic all the way through. And it was in the 13th inning that Colorado finally scored another run, and the Cubs failed to respond. They went down 1-2-3, all striking out swinging in the bottom of the 13th, and that ended the Cubs season. So another surprising outcome, but certainly happy for the Rockies moving forward. Any other thoughts on that game?
No, it was such an interesting game in that, I mean, how many empty doubles did it feel like the Rockies hit where, I mean, these old guys like Matt Holliday are hitting doubles and then just dying on second base. And I mean, the logical conclusion there is the Rockies can't drive these guys in. The Cubs are going to get hot eventually, but maybe we all had a little bias just going off the Cubs of 15, 16, and 17 that the Cubs of 18 couldn't do it. And it was something. It was very interesting. I don't know if we learned more about the Rockies or the Cubs in that game, honestly. And I think if you're a Cubs fan, you got to be a little disappointed, but probably not that surprised going off what happened in September. So interesting game. Great game to watch. I kind of wish it hadn't gone 13 because I think all of us had to be up early for work the next morning.
Yep.
But overall, fun game.
Yeah, definitely. And let's go to the American League where the Yankees faced the Athletics to decide the wild card winner for that. Did you think the Athletics had a chance in this game coming in?
I did too. Until that first home run from the Yankees, and then I didn't.
I think this game is sort of an interesting microcosm of the season in that this season has seen record strikeout rates and record home run rates. And I think coming in, the thought was, at least my thinking was, that if the Athletics could just hold a candle to the Yankees' slugging ability, then they could have a shot. But that is, of course, not at all what happened. The Yankees set the team record, by the way, for the most home runs in a major league season this year. And so this is a team that wins by the long ball. And sure enough, I mean, I think that came through loud and clear in this game as they opened up a big lead against the Athletics and took it away. And it was sad because I don't know what your policy is, Pete, but when I don't have a real rooting interest in a singular team, I basically end up going for the underdog, and the underdog is normally the team that has a smaller market. So the A's in this case, we've all seen Moneyball. We know the problems that the A's have with running a front office on pennies compared to the big ones. And this is the Athletics against the team that best symbolizes the excesses of modern baseball and the abilities to spend whatever you want on, you know, free agent guys like Giancarlo Stanton. So I was rooting for the A's against the Yankees. They had a fighting chance, but in the end, it was just not enough behind the Yankees' star slugging power. So,
yeah, kind of a disappointing game. I think what was that final 7-2?
7-2, yeah,
7-0, and it just, you know, after I think the middle of the second, I think after the top of the second, really, you kind of knew, and after the in the bottom of the second where that towering home run was hit, you just knew it was not going to be the A's day, which is disappointing. But hopefully they're on the up and up, especially with their AAA team out here in Vegas. I got to root for them now.
You know, I think one interesting thing coming out of that Yankees-A's matchup is there was a lot of criticism, maybe not criticism, a lot of speculation about Aaron Judge. He's, of course, coming off of the broken wrist earlier this season. Yep. And when you looked at his splits, he came back earlier in September from the wrist. But when you look at his splits, his pre-wrist performance was way higher. I think he was hitting around 280. And post-wrist, coming back from the wrist, he was hitting around 230. And of course, the slugging numbers reflected that shift as well. He was slugging a lot better before versus after. But now there's a good case to be made that Judge is really back, because in that game, Judge had a double and a home run. And if this is the type of Judge that we'll see in the playoffs, I think we're going to have some exciting baseball going on in the Bronx, especially in this first matchup with the Red Sox. The typical rivalry here. It's going to be really fun to watch these next few division series games, Red Sox, Yankees.
I can't believe they haven't faced off since 2004.
It's amazing, right?
I mean, that's incredible. I mean,
and that was a big year for the Red Sox.
Yeah, all the good things that happened for the Red Sox in that series, with how much they came back, it's incredible. And as much as anyone who is not a Red Sox or Yankees fan likes to root against them, you have to admit, this is going to be a fun series. I mean, each game is probably going to take about 6.5 hours.
I think you're right. Yeah.
But it's going to be a fun series. I mean, it's Goliath versus Goliath. I mean, 200 game winners. I mean, do you remember that the Rays, who were awful at the All-Star break, you remember picking up Tommy Pham, and we all said, poor Tommy Pham?
Yes.
The Rays had a great second half and still finished 18 games out of first place. I mean, the Yankees, 100 game winners, were in the wild card by the middle of September, 100 game winner as the wild card, without a doubt. I mean, it was an incredible year in Boston. Great second half, especially in New York. This is going to be a fun series. Who are you giving the edge to right now?
That's a great question. You know, I don't know. I think this team is so evenly matched on balance. You know, the Red Sox, I think, have the more compelling individual players. I love Mookie Betts. You know that. I love Chris Sale. I think the Red Sox, you know, both have great rotations. I think the Red Sox have a more top-heavy starting rotation with a guy like Sale at the top. But I think the Yankees have a slightly more robust rotation. I think we came into the season thinking the Yankees had a great bullpen. They ended up not quite being who we thought they were, but they bolstered that by adding Zach Britton. And the Red Sox probably should have bolstered their bullpen a little bit. So I think maybe advantage Yankees on the bullpen. But as far as the batting, I think it's hard to say who exactly has the advantage here. The Yankees as a group have a WRC plus of 111. 100 is average. The Red Sox have a WRC plus of 110. So pretty evenly matched up there as well. But then the stars and the Red Sox really stand out. Mookie Betts with the 185 WRC plus, and JD Martinez right behind him with a 170. The highest on the Yankees is Aaron Judge with a 149. Or actually, it's actually Luke Voit, but that's a smaller sample size of only 39 games. But the point is, I think, again, more top heavy on the Red Sox side, but more balanced on the Yankees side.
Yeah, well, and don't forget that we think of the Yankees hitting home runs and that being their offense, and we think of the Sox as just being a machine in terms of what they're able to do, especially at Fenway. But the Sox only scored about 14 more runs than the Yankees overall this year. So we've
That's
got
a good
two
point.
Pretty similar offenses. They obviously generate runs in a different way, which could be which could become very interesting in this series, right? Where the Yankees, if they're not hitting the long ball, they're not really known for producing runs in the way we think of getting the double, then a single, bunting a man in, hitting into the gap, whatever it's going to be. For the Yankees, it seems like it's very much feast or famine. But as I'm looking at these stats, that must be the eye test fooling me, because these offenses are a lot more similar than I was giving them credit for. So I think this is going to be, I hope, a more competitive series than we're thinking of just Yankees hitting home runs and Red Sox having outstanding pitching. But if I'm looking at it right now, I think I like the Yankees. I think the Yankees have come on stronger here in the last 2 or 3 weeks. And if I compare managers, and we've debated the impact of the manager in baseball back and forth, I'm actually giving the edge to Aaron Boone going forward in this series over Alex Cora. So for some reason, I'm in the Yankees camp just a little, but I think it's going to be close.
I tend to agree with you. I think the Yankees also will take this. I'll say Yankees in five. I think this is going to be a close series.
Yep,
I think it'll be down to the wire. But I like the Yankees for two reasons. One is, I already mentioned this, but the deeper bullpen. They just have more guys that I think they can count on. They already picked up Zach Britton earlier this season. He's not the same guy that he was 2 years ago or even a year ago, but he's, I think, still definitely a serviceable arm in their bullpen, even a lead guy who can come in and close out a game. He induces a lot of ground balls. That's what you want from a reliever, because you don't want to be beaten by the long ball, have a, you know, game tying moonshot, three runs, bottom of the ninth, whatever. So Zach Britton's, I think, good for that role. Aroldis Chapman, of course, we've seen what he can do in the postseason. Dellin Betances, Tommy Conley, they got him from the White Sox last year. Another good arm. And on down the line, they've, of course, moved Sonny Gray to the bullpen. I think he's better there. Lance Lynn, Justice Sheffield, lots of guys. The Red Sox, I think, are just not quite as deep on that. Looking at their list right now, Craig Kimbrell, of course, one of the most prolific postseason closers ever. And he's very good. But after that, there's a pretty steep drop off. And in the regular season, it might not matter as much. But in the postseason, especially in modern baseball, where so much goes into, you already mentioned this, right, with the manager versus manager, but so much goes into bullpen usage and the cat and mouse game of double shifts and substitutions and matching up the pitcher with the hitter to reduce the hitter's chance of successfully pulling it off. You just need more tools at your disposal to do that effectively. And I like the Yankees' toolbox for doing that.
I agree. The only thing I will caveat, going back to my earlier point about Aaron Boone, I don't know if you've seen any MLB Tonight or any real coverage of this series outside of kind of what you're getting with the highlights recently, but Aaron Boone has been talking about his bullpen and how much he wants to use his bullpen situationally and how he's all in on the bullpen and all this. I am a little worried. After I said I'm in the Yankees camp just a little and have more faith in Aaron Boone, all of a sudden, I see Aaron Boone playing this like I play fantasy football and tinkering too much and making one extra move that he doesn't make. So we'll see. We've got, obviously, both guys have been around the game of baseball their entire lives. Aaron Boone was on Sunday Night Baseball for a long time. I would argue before it went downhill with A-Rod, but that's another discussion for another time. But it's going to be very interesting how these guys manage these bullpens and make these moves that I think we're going to see more, obviously, AL-style offense, but I think we could see more NL managerial techniques in how to handle a pitching staff.
Yeah, I think you're right. Well, let's stay American League for now. Let's go to the other matchup. This one's, I think, is going to be very compelling as well, and I think we got to speed things along because we're going to run out of time. But
yeah,
Astros-Indians, who do you have in this matchup and why?
So I like the Astros kind of based on a whole body of work instead of just one specific thing. When I look at the Indians, obviously the Indians had a great year, and you look at the guys like Corey Kluber and Carrasco and Bauer, and you look at four starters who each had 200 strikeouts apiece, and it's incredible what they were able to do in Cleveland. But then I look at their record, and I look at their record in the AL Central, and I look at their record outside the AL Central, and it becomes very apparent to me very quickly that while the Indians were great at beating up on their in-division rivals, which is obviously incredibly important
right,
in the way you get into the playoffs, they weren't that good outside the AL Central. Outside the AL Central, they were only 42-44. They didn't have a winning record outside their division. So while I think the Indians absolutely have the better kind of on paper resume, I would argue out of a starting rotation, I believe much more in the Astros starting rotation. And even though guys like George Springer and Jose Altuve have been hurt this year and haven't produced like we saw last year, I still give the edge to the Astros right now in walking out the door. I mean, how can you ever bet against a guy like Justin Verlander? How can you bet against anyone in this Astros starting rotation now? So I give the edge to them. I think this could be I also think this could be a 5-game series, and maybe I'm rooting for it to be a 5-game series, but I've got the Astros in 5 on this one.
I like that pick. I think I would say if it goes to 5 games, the Indians will win it, because I think the Astros are so good or better enough than the Indians to not take it to 5 games. So I think if the Indians can even get to 5 games, it means that things have gone wrong for the Astros. And we can, at that point, I think, just say, well, we might as well just go with the guys who were the underdogs at the outset and take the Indians. So I think if we're sitting here looking at a game 5 that's upon us, I think I'll say I'm going to put my money with Terry Francona and the Indians.
Sure.
Because they've gotten it this far. But you're right. Go ahead.
I was going to ask you, do you know, I'm looking it up and I can't figure it out right now. Is Andrew Miller healthy going into the playoffs right now? I know he got hurt, but they're really hanging their hat on Andrew Miller. Have you seen anything? I'll look it up while you're talking to me.
No, I've not. And I was wondering the same thing, what the status of Trevor Bauer is looking like lately. I know he's...
Yeah, with the ankle.
Yeah, exactly. Because I think that will certainly have a bearing on this. Looking up Andrew Miller news right now, but... while I'm doing that, I'll just say that I think the Astros are historically great. And when you go down the lineup, the batting lineup for the Astros, there are no obvious weaknesses. When you do that for their pitching staff, there are no obvious weaknesses. And it's just really impressive that the Astros have been able to assemble such an amazing roster. It's why they won the World Series last year. It's why they were the favorite coming in this year. Sure. And so they've compiled such an incredible record over the past 2 years of baseball, but at the same time, they've really not been the best team in baseball at any point this year. They were outpaced by the Red Sox pretty much from the get-go, and were never able to catch them. And so this is a team that has shown itself to be historically great as far as talent is concerned. And they certainly think of themselves that way when you hear, you know, guys like Alex Bregman and George Springer and Justin Verlander talk about the crew that they have there. They have a very high conception of themselves, and I don't mean that as a criticism. I think they should, because they're a very good team, historically great. But when it comes to the actual record and winning games, they've just not had the goods that everyone thought they would. So, you know, will they turn it on here at the end? I don't know. I think injuries have hampered them. I think that's one reason why they've not performed expectations, but you know, it's not like injuries magically go away or no longer have an effect in the postseason. And on the other side, you know, going against Cleveland, Cleveland has this guy named Josh Donaldson, who is, I think, maybe kind of an X factor for this series. He's of course coming back from injury, and I just said that injuries can linger, and it's certainly true. But when he's been healthy this year, he's had one of the highest WRC pluses of anyone on the Indians roster. So. If he can come in and play some serviceable baseball, or even come off the bench and be a pinch hitter against a, you know, a pitcher from the Houston bullpen, I think that could be a difference maker in a game or two. So I think there are enough things for Houston to be concerned about facing the Indians. I do think they're the favorites here. I do pick Houston to win, but I'm going to go Houston in 4. And like I said, if Cleveland gets to force a game 5, I'm just going to go with them in that game 5.
Fair. It looks like both Andrew Miller and Bauer are back for this series. Neither look 100%, but both are back, so that could be interesting. I think the only thing I would pile on, and then we can move on, is just it seems to me like the Indians were kind of trending down towards the end of the season. You look at guys like Jose Ramirez, who I think was an MVP candidate around the All-Star break.
Yeah.
He didn't do anything in the second half. And we just look at the strengths of the Indians kind of seem to be trending downward. So I think that's where I leaned Astros. But hopefully it's a good series. Honestly, you got to root for Cleveland, right? I mean, obviously I'm on the Browns bandwagon for anyone who listens to our football show. But yeah. you got to root for Cleveland. They were so close a couple years ago against the Cubs. I love Terry Francona as a manager and a guy. I think he's fantastic. So
I agree.
I will not be disappointed in the outcome of the series either way, honestly.
I think you're right, though, that that, you know, I would talk about the Astros underperforming, but the Indians really have too, because I think it was Buster Olney actually picked the Indians to win the World Series. And the reason is they have all these guys on their roster. I mean, Francisco Lindor is one of the most fun players in baseball. I'd put him right up there with Mookie Betts and Mike Trout as far as just watching him play the game. Jose Ramirez, you mentioned, absolutely incredible. Corey Kluber, right? Former Cy Young winner on their staff. Trevor Bauer, also same thing. But all these guys, you know, they started off a little bit slow. They heated up towards the All-Star break, and we thought, okay, now the Indians are kicking into high gear. They're ready to go. And then they sort of just petered off again. And so in some ways, maybe I'm sort of low on the Indians because I don't really feel like I know what this team is. I feel like I thought I knew that in the beginning, and they've sort of let me down. So I'm sort of hesitant to throw my hat back into the ring with them. But I think... Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, think about the competition or lack thereof they dealt with in the AL Central. I mean, the Astros in the AL West had to contend with a strong Mariners midseason. I mean, they had the great Zach Crippen visit them over the summer, and they turned it on. And obviously, you look at the Athletics making the push into the wild card game. I mean, the Astros, I don't think anyone really thought the Astros were going to get caught, but they were at least having to fight teams off. And I mean, who in the AL Central even competed this year besides the Indians? I thought the Twins were going to do something this year, and they didn't.
No.
The Tigers, they didn't show up. I mean, the Royals called it in.
The Royals tried to be the Orioles worst and Buck team in history. Yeah. Did.
Yeah. I mean, it was just an awful year in the American League overall, I'd argue, outside of our five playoff teams coming out of the American League.
Oh, totally.
Especially the AL Central.
Yeah, and we've talked about that too, how the, you know, one of the main differences today between the American League and the National League is that the National League is fun to watch in the regular season, and the American League is not. You know, the American League produces these behemoths, Astros, Yankees, Red Sox, Indians, but who wants to go watch the, you know, Yankees beat up on the Orioles in any given July evening, right? The National League, on the other hand, has all these tight races. I mean, we were 2 weeks out from the end of the season, and there were scenarios in which eight different teams could get into the playoffs from the National League alone. And that just offers a level of excitement and compelling entertainment in the regular season. The American League just can't offer us with the sort of power disparity between teams right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Fair. You want to move over to the National League now that we've
the Superior League, the American League? Let's move to the Superior League. So we've got two matchups now that the Cubs have been eliminated by the Rockies in that 13-inning game. We have the Rockies playing the Brewers, and just today they lost that game against the Brewers 3-2. They did take it to extra innings. They were down 2-0, came back, made it 2-2 in the ninth inning. But then lost when the Brewers scored in the bottom of the bottom of the 10th. And then as we speak right now, actually, the Dodgers are taking it to the Braves. Last I checked, let me pull it up right now. I think it was 4-0 Dodgers leading the Braves. Let's see if it's still that way. But that's what it's... If the score holds, that's what it would look like. Dodgers over Braves for game one. 5-0 now, excuse me. Dodgers over Braves. And, of course, Brewers over Cubs. So... Is this an omen of things to come, Pete? Are you taking Dodgers and Brewers respectively in their series, or do you think the Braves and Rockies will have a shot?
What bums me out is I think I'm taking both winners to go all the way. You know, okay. I wrote out my predictions about 48 hours ago for the National League once that wild card game was set, and I knew you and I would be talking tonight. And I wrote Brew Crew in four, Dodgers in five. I'm sorry, I wrote Braves in five. And then I watched Yasiel Puig in the postgame.
Yeah.
And for some reason, I don't know what it was in how he said it, and I know it got a lot of attention on ESPN and all these places. I started believing in the Dodgers, which I did not do all year. So I've actually got Dodgers in five. The Braves are going to keep this competitive. Not tonight. But the Braves are going to keep this competitive, but the Dodgers are just going to squeak by. I really don't think the Rocks are going to challenge the Brew Crew. I think the Brew Crew offense is good, not great, but good. But just the ability of that bullpen to shut everyone down past the sixth inning. I am really high on Milwaukee right now. Probably higher than I should be, but I'm high enough on them that I'm pretty confident we will see them playing around Halloween.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, we'll get to some predictions at the very end of this, but I will just give you a spoiler here, and I too am very, very high on the Brewers. So I also think the Brewers will dispatch the Rockies. You said four games. I'm going to be even more optimistic, higher on the Brewers. I'm going to say three games. I think they'll sweep the Rockies out of the playoffs here. So I'm calling Brewers in three. In the Dodgers Braves matchup, I'd feel more confident in this prediction if the Dodgers were not up 5-0 on the Braves right now. But I'm actually going to say Braves are going to take this one. I think part of it is just, you know, I like an underdog story, and I see in the Braves a really young team with really compelling young players like Ronald Acuna and Ozzy Albies. I see a team that is vastly overperforming expectations coming in. I mean, everyone thought that the Braves were going to be finishing second to last in the National League East, at best right in the middle behind the Nats. Probably somewhere around the also young, also rebuilding Phillies. But instead, the Braves went on a tear, really separated themselves from the pack in the month of September as the Phillies kind of floundered and the Nats just, you know, continued to, I don't even know what the Nats were doing this whole season. And the Braves have been really fun to watch, and I just like an underdog story. You know, I think one of their main problems is that they're such a young team. It might just be one season too early. It might be that they're here now and they're going to learn a lot of things that they can take forward in their careers, possibly into next year. I think they're the presumptive favorites to win the National League East again next year. So I think they'll find themselves in this spot again, barring a complete turnaround by the Nats. But still, I just like this team. And when I look at the Dodgers, I mean, the Dodgers are the heavyweight here, the highest paid team in the major leagues. They go out in free agency and get everybody they want to get outside of Shohei Ohtani in the offseason. They bring in Manny Machado, one of the best shortstops in baseball, at the trade deadline because they can. And then they proceed to finish the season, the regular season, with a tie, tied with the Rockies, one of the lowest paid teams in baseball. And, you know, have to settle that in a one game playoff, game 163. So I guess what I'm saying is, what I see from the Dodgers is an inability to consistently execute in accordance with their talent level. And I think the Braves are the opposite of that. They consistently are punching above their weight. And because of that, I like them in a five-game series. Like I said, they're already going to be in a one-game deficit after tonight, barring a major comeback. So we'll see. But I'm still going to go with the Braves here in a five-game series. Braves in five.
Yeah, they're ahead on this rebuild by far. You're right. I think they benefited from the Nationals being probably one of the most significant underperforming teams, I would argue, in the last 10, 15 years. And then you look at the overall NL East, and obviously your Phillies were strong, but not really strong enough. The Braves really, I think, were probably 2 years ahead of where they should have been. And it is that youth that makes me nervous about jumping on the Braves.
Right.
You remember, and our listeners might remember, on my great road trip east that I was buying on the Braves back in June. I liked them. I just think the Dodgers, if they can gel all these pieces who haven't been together until about a week and a half ago full time, I think the Dodgers are just too talented right now for the Braves. I would argue that they're top to bottom the most talented team in the NL. I mean, they're what is it? They lead baseball in position player war. They're fifth in pitching war. And you look at having guys like Clayton Kershaw, whose velocity is down a little, but still great. Corey Seager's back. I mean, I'm not willing, much like when we talk about the Patriots in football, I'm not willing to bet against the Dodgers right now just because of how much raw talent they have on the field. I think translating that has always been the Dodgers' problem.
Right.
But I think at least in getting past the Braves, I think they can do it.
That's fair. All right, well, should we do predictions all the way to the World Series now?
Let's do it.
All right, so we've already done our division series results, but let's just recap. So I said Yankees, I said Astros, Braves, and Brewers.
Do we really only disagree on one series? That is so boring, and that means we're going to lose on all of these that we agree on.
It probably does mean that, yeah.
I've got Astros in five, Yanks in four, Brew Crew in four, Dodgers in five.
Okay, perfect. So in your scenario, we're going to have a National League Championship Series, Dodgers-Brewers, and an American League Championship Series, Yankees-Astros, right? So who's going to win those?
So I've actually got the Yankees pulling the surprise and taking the Astros down. And I've got the Brewers beating the Dodgers in the NLCS. In what is baseball's worst nightmare, in losing out on the Dodgers and the Cubs out of the National League, and then playing the Yankees in the World Series. But I've got the Yankees winning it all in the World Series.
Oh, man. Yankees. This is what, back to 2001? Is that the last time the Yankees won a World Series?
I think I'm tracking a 2008 or 2009 World
Series. Oh, really? That recently?
Right? Didn't Joe Girardi get one?
Maybe. I guess I just try to block out. Yeah, 2009. You're right. I just try to block out Yankees World Series championships from my mind. Okay, so I think those are good predictions. I want to disagree with you, but I was going to say Yankees over Astros as well. But just to be more interesting, I'll take a conventional choice and say Astros over Yankees. Brewers over Braves. So I think that's where the Braves youth catches up to them. It's when they encounter Josh Hader and company in the Brewers bullpen. So I think we'll have a Brewers-Astros World Series. And I'm going to say the Brewers pull off the upset. I can't stop rooting for a small market team. So Brewers upset the defending champion Houston Astros in 7 games. It's going to be a nail biter down to the wire. It's going to be fun. Josh Hader is going to be striking out George Springer on a backwards K to end the ninth in the 7th game of the World Series.
Just whipping that long hair back and forth.
That's right. Yep. Exactly.
So. Now that we said that, the Brewers aren't going to win another game. Like, won't. It's over. It's, yeah. Sorry, guys.
All right. Well, Pete, anything else to talk about baseball-wise?
Nah, it's the most wonderful time of the year, my man. Okay. Middle of October. We got Sam Adams Oktoberfest on tap. We've got Major League Baseball playoffs. Football's in full swing. Life is good.
It really is. We'll be back to talk more baseball next week after the division series wrap up. We'll talk about how wrong we were on predicting the results of these. We'll preview the National and American League Championship Series and all of that. In the meantime, watch your feed in Third String here for some more football stuff coming your way, including the Dime a Dozen, where we do our patented pick or set of picks, our parlay pick, $1.20.
Hypothetical parlay pick.
Patent pending, right? A hypothetical $1.20 parlay pick that in a hypothetical world could net a lot of money if it's right. And it's never right. So maybe one day it will be. But
listen to it to know who not to bet on.
Exactly. we came close though last week and the week before. A lot of the upsets we pick, I think that's a problem, Pete. We get a little bold in picking the upsets, and the upsets almost come true, but they don't quite. And then we just look stupid because we were wrong. But really, we had the right idea originally. So we just have to be a little bit less bold in the upset predictions, I think.
I'm just, can't get any worse, so we might as well.
I'm just rationalizing our mediocrity. All right. Well, thank you so much for listening. You can reach out to us at Third String Pod on Twitter, at Zach Crippen, or at Pete_Laclede. Let us know what you think. Let us know what we missed. We'll talk to you soon. Thanks again for listening. Have a great day from all of us here at Third String Podcast.